good morning, church. So the 11 years, technically I wasn't at Fidelity for 11 years. I think Pastor Isaiah, you asked me how long I've been married. So 11 years of almost been married. 11 years in October to Desiree. So yeah, I just wanted to make sure I clear that up. Fidelity, I've been there for about 4 years now, but within the industry, close to 15 years now. Yes, big improvement. Absolutely great. Thanks. Well, it is a privilege to be able to speak to you all this morning just about debt. Hopefully you all got a handout. If you don't, go ahead and raise your hand. I think Pastor AJ is going to go around and make sure everyone has a handout. Perfect. So so for today, even though, yes, I've worked in the industry in terms of financial advising or financial planning for clients for a good part of 14, 15 years now, I can't say I'm necessarily an expert, right? There's so much about this particular topic for us to know about, to learn about. But what I'm excited about the fact that we're going through this particular series on finance is that my hope and goal is that as a church, we can talk more openly and honestly about money. I mean, money is such an important aspect of our lives. And so I do hope again that that with this series, we might not necessarily answer every single question, but at least hopefully it will bring down some of the barriers when it comes to money, and as a church, we can start to have some honest and good conversations about how to be good stewards of what we have. Okay, so wanted to do a quick headline in terms of what we'll be covering today. So I did break down my session or my lesson here into three different sections. So section number one is our heart behind the money. And section two is, what does the Bible say about debt? Section three, so what are some practical real world examples that we can think through? Now, when you think through my particular outline, you might be thinking, wait, why are we talking about heart? I thought we were supposed to be talking about debt and money. And there's a reason why I do want to start with the heart, but we will get to that in just a second. But again, first part, our heart behind the money. Second part, what does the Bible say about debt? And third, some practical real-world examples that we can apply. Okay, and so before we get started, do want to take a quick look at the fourth truths that Pastor Isaiah brought up 2 weeks ago. And so these are the four truths that Neuheisen mentioned in his book, and everything that we talk about ties back into these truths, right, when it comes to finance. So truth number one, God is the owner and source of all wealth. Number two, the fall of mankind has made resources scarce and labor hard. Truth number three, we are managers of God's wealth. Truth four, your use of wealth reveals your character. Now, last week, Jason, when he talked through the theology of work, he touched on truth number one and two, that God is the owner of everything, he created everything, but because of the fall of man, resources are scarce, labor is hard, right? And so today, one of the truths I want us to really focus on is number four, your use of wealth reveals your character. So, why I wanted to start with heart, right? Because how we view money and how we use money is a direct reflection of what's going on inside here, all right? And so the first part, so what's heart got to do with it? I'm not gonna sing that. I thought about it, but no. Some of you might understand that Tina Turner reference. Anyway, so why do I start with the heart? And the complicated truth about money is that, well, it's complicated. Right? And money, again, like I mentioned, is a reflection of us. So you can learn more about a person by how they spend their time and their money compared to what they're actually saying. Right? So Neuheiser writes, if you want to know a person's character, you study how that person spends his time and money. And that shows you where the heart is. So essentially what he's saying is how we view money, think about money, our use of money, and how we obtain money reflects what we actually treasure. So let me say that again. How we view money, think about money, use our money, and obtain money reflects what we actually treasure. So John Shigematsu, a few weeks ago, when he introduced us to this idea of money baggage, right? And the way he defined it is these distortions in our view of money that most of us have learned throughout the years, right? Whether it is through family, whether it's from the culture around us, or different influences that probably weren't based in scripture. And so we do need to take time to think through some of these experiences and events in our lives that shaped our view of money and how that has impacted us with our money. So that's actually a really great conversation point, even within the church or close friends, to talk about, hey, this is something that's happened before in my own past or my experience that I think is shaping how I use my money or view money. Now, on a deeper level, John also mentioned that money strikes right into the heart, and specifically into something called heart idols. So in that third section, or third line there that I bolded for you guys in your outline, what are heart idols? Well, I pulled some of this material here from Tim Keller's Counterfeit Gods. If you haven't read it yet, I highly, highly recommend the book. He has a section on money, but essentially ties into a lot of different aspects of our lives. But for this book, just gonna focus a little bit more on the heart idol side. But essentially, Keller defines heart idols as this: it is anything more important to you than God, anything that absorbs your heart and imagination more than God, anything you seek to give you what only God can give. And then he goes on to describe this in even more in the context of what happens when we lose this idol. There is a difference between sorrow and despair. Sorrow is pain for which there are sources of consolation. Sorrow comes from losing one good thing among others. So that if you experience a career reversal, you lose your job, you can find comfort in your family to get through it. Despair, however, is inconsolable because it comes from losing an ultimate thing. That's the key word, ultimate thing. When you lose the ultimate source of your meaning or hope, there are no alternative sources to turn to. It breaks you apart. And so when we build our lives on whatever this ultimate thing is, heart idols, that is essentially idolatry. And now maybe some of you might say, okay, money isn't exactly my ultimate. I am not working endless hours just to make money for money's sake. But money, like many things, really is just what we call a surface idol. And surface idols are things that we use to get what we actually really desire. So whether it's money, using our family, whether it's spouses or kids, maybe even ministry, using these things to in some way manipulate to get what we actually want. And the list of these four main or deep idols, as Keller would say, is these four things I listed on your handout there. Number one, comfort. Number two, power or influence. Number three, approval. And number four, control. Right? And so each of these deep idols, they generate a different set of fears and different set of hopes. And so things like money or whatever it is that God has given to us, again, family, friends, our careers, work, ministry, oftentimes if our heart is in the wrong place, we use these things really just to seek fulfillment under these four particular deep idols. Tracking with me so far? Okay, perfect. Now, so why does it matter to know where our hearts are at? Well, in Luke 16, verses 13 to 15. Now, Jesus answering or addressing the Pharisees and says here, no servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Now, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard these things, and they ridiculed him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your heart. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God. Now again, we can't serve two masters. So if our ultimate thing, what we're really longing for, is something other than God, then we have a problem. So let's take a look at a couple of examples to see how this could play out. So someone who might struggle with, let's say, the heart idol of control, wanting to control things. So how would they use the money in that particular way? Well, a person who seeks control maybe is pursuing to have more money as a way to control their life. And they usually, maybe they don't want to spend on things, and they actually do probably a good job in saving and investing, and that's because they want to feel secure, and that security is tied to how much money is in their bank account. Maybe there's someone that struggles with approval or wanting to feel that others see them a certain way. And so maybe for them, they might struggle with wanting to attain money just so they can access certain social groups. Or that maybe they are overly generous to the point that might maybe a little bit foolish because they're trying to make more people like them, right? So sometimes when we look at how we spend our money or how we view our money, again, ties in many times to what's going on, again, inside in our own hearts, right? I think I have time for this. So one quick example I also wanted to share, which is a personal story of mine, how thinking through how I view money, how I spend money, was something that I had to learn over the years. And so one of the things that I know I struggle with is the idea of comfort. And so that comes in many different ways. That could come from me wanting to avoid conflict or confrontations. I know early on in marriage, when me and Desiree get into conflict, I just shut down and not talk for hours. And so I end up just staring at a wall. I just don't want to do a confrontation, right? And so for me, deep down, I like to be comfortable, right? And so when it came to money, I always thought, well, I'm not really greedy. I'm not trying to just make money or make millions to spend on nice cars or have big houses. But then in 2020, when COVID came out and the market crashed, now, give you a little bit of context of what was going on during that time. In early 2020, I had just left a pretty comfortable job that I was well-established in Bank of America and Merrill Lynch. Moved over to Fidelity for different reasons I can chat about with you guys later if you're interested. But essentially, in my career, a big portion of my income is based on the variable side, how much I can actually close in investment sales, right? And so making the move already from Bank of America Merrill Lynch to Fidelity, there was actually more weight on that variable side of my compensation, right? And so when I just moved over, COVID happened, we were working from home, the market was crashing. Who's going to want to invest at that time? There's fear in the markets. We were calling clients, we actually had, I think, on average 4,000 calls every hour at the branch just from what was going on, right? And so for me, I was just thinking, okay, my own investments are down. No one's going to want to invest. And I started to panic and get scared. And then one day I realized, wait, okay, if everything were to just stop right now, would me and my family still be okay? Like, are we going to not be able to have a roof over our heads in the next week? And the answer was no. So I thought, why is it that I'm so scared? And I realized it wasn't the fact that I was afraid my family was going to not have a place to stay. But then I realized, oh man, I actually have to worry about a budget. I actually have to worry about not or denying myself boba or coffee whenever I want. I'm realizing that I have to actually think through how I spend my money instead of, oh, okay, I guess we can get that. Oh, I guess we can just use that or buy that. Right? And I realized that for me, not wanting to put in the work to budget and plan and actually be more responsible was because I was honestly lazy and wanted to be comfortable. And so even in those small little ways, you can see how, for me, I noticed that my own heart idol being comfort also seeped into how I viewed finances, how I used finances. Does that kind of make sense, how heart and finance tie in together? Perfect. And so now then the next question is, well, if we know that, again, we are sinners, we have these hard idols that are constantly competing against our attention with God, how can we fight against that? And so in the next session, I labeled it as the poverty of Christ. And so in 2 Corinthians 8:9, Paul writes, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich." And so what Paul is essentially saying here is that Jesus gave up his treasure in heaven in order to make you his treasure, for you are a treasured people. Now, when you see him dying to make you his treasure, that will make him yours. Money will cease to be the currency of your significance and security, and you will want to bless others with what you have. And so we need to make sure that we get this, right? It's essentially the gospel that Christ poured out his wealth on us. And when we understand that, then we don't have to worry about money because we know that the cross proves God's care for us, and that gives us security. We don't have to be envious of anyone else's money because Jesus' love and the salvation he provided to us at the cross and the status that he gives to us as sons and children of God is more than enough, and no money can buy that for us. Right? In Ephesians 2, verse 4-7, "But God being rich in mercy because of his love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, he made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places." So again, it's not just salvation that Christ provided at the cross, but that we were elevated and raised with him and seated with him in the heavenly places. And so again, that status that we have because of what Christ did, again, money, nothing on this earth can ever get that for us. And even though we know this, it bears repeating that money, at the end of the day, can't save us from tragedy. It can't give us control in a chaotic world. And so in order for us to break out of this this power of money or these heart idols that we can struggle with, is for us to deepen, our understanding and grasp of the salvation we have in Christ and to live it out. And it is the same gospel that should be restructuring our motivations, our worldview, our identity, and of course, how we view our money. Okay, and so, as I mentioned before, how we view money, think about money, use our money, and obtain money reflects what we actually treasure. And so I pray that as a church, that as we continue to dive down into money, that we pray and encourage each other in the gospel. And it's the same gospel that reorients our heart back to our true treasure, which is Christ. Right? And so I feel like when we talk about money, that's always going to be the starting point, again, is when we think about how we're using money or managing money. Number one, where is our heart at? Okay? And that, again, completely changes the lens in which we look at money. And so then on to just about debt, right? So as we try to make sure that we're in the right framework when it comes to managing money, I know with today we want to take a look specifically at debt and what the Bible says about debt. Okay, so before I move on actually, are there any questions about what we covered about heart? I know I'm going to be talking a lot today, but I promise we'll try to get to a part where we have some Q&A. All right, so about debt. And so in the Bible's central message actually regarding debt is that it should be released or canceled, paid or forgiven. It doesn't always refer to debt as financial, and it overwhelmingly focuses on our response to debt situations. And so again, tying back to the heart, how do we respond, right? Now, I wanted to make sure that we looked at some key passages that do actually talk about some principles here about debt. And so that first one here is we need to pay it back, right? In Exodus 22:14, if anything is borrowed, it should be paid back. If what is borrowed is lost or injured, full restitution must be made. Psalms 37:21 says, the wicked borrows but does not pay back, but the righteous is generous and gives. So essentially what it's saying here is that it's a sin to borrow with the intent of not paying back, right? And practically, again, this means that if we are to borrow money, we do also need to consider our ability to pay back that particular loan, right? So that ties into part of that wisdom. If you're looking to take a loan, making sure that you are actually running the numbers and making sure that you have that ability to pay that loan back. Number two, debt is presumptuous. Now, what does that mean? Is that when you are taking a loan, you're essentially saying to the creditor that I am borrowing this money because I promise to pay it back tomorrow. Well, in James 4:13-15, it says, come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go into such and such town and spend a year there and trade and make profit, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. And so there is no guarantee about tomorrow. And oftentimes we incur debt with the optimistic assumption that we can pay that back later. But we can't expect that we are going to have uninterrupted stability or prosperity in this fallen world, right? I started in my particular career in financial advising in 2008. The best time in history to start in that particular career, right, when everything was collapsing. But what helped me in terms of shaping my idea about money, especially at that young age, was seeing how big financial recessions can have such a big impact. You might just see the news or hear it, but for those of you who probably lived through it or know friends who were really impacted by it, you see how it actually did destroy many lives or impacted many lives greatly, right? So again, when we are taking a loan, it is on a presumptive basis here. Okay, and then Proverbs 16:9 says, the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. So again, ultimately, God is the one in control, and we are not. Next point here is debt is enslaving. Now, in Proverbs 22:7, it says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. Right. So back in ancient days, if you owed a debt to someone and you couldn't pay it back, you could become the way to pay it back was to become a slave to that person, right? Until either you paid it off with your work or your friends and family would actually help pay off your debt. Now, we don't quite have that kind of system here in America, but even in today, if the debt can end up becoming like a shackle that prevents you from fulfilling your God-given responsibilities to provide for your family or to give to the Lord's work. Now, the next point here is debt is costly, right? And this shouldn't come to a surprise to us, right? Usually when we're taking on debt, there's a certain interest that you have to pay on top of what you're pulling out, right? And so if you're using debt for the purpose of enhancing your lifestyle, in reality, you're actually reducing your lifestyle, because in the long run, you're going to be paying more for whatever it is that you're borrowing the money for. Now, debt can also cause you to lose what you have, right? In Proverbs 22:27, it writes that if you have nothing but which to pay, why should he take your bed from under you? It's essentially, this particular context of this proverb is actually in light of someone co-signing a loan for someone else. And that's one of the things that we'll get into later. But it's essentially saying that you could lose everything you have, right? If you don't pay back the loan, if you don't pay back a home loan, you lose the house. And so this leads us to the next point here of debt is stressful, right? And so in Matthew 6:25, Jesus says here that, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Well, if you're constantly living in debt, you are going to be anxious about your life, right? Because you're going to be worried about, okay, can I make that next payment? Can I pay off this debt? And just that constant weight of knowing that you have certain bills that are going to be coming due. For any of us that have experienced that, that is stressful, right? And so again, debt is stressful. And so this last point here, kind of, I know we've been focusing on a lot of negative side about debt, but looking at something about, okay, what would happen if we do have our finances in order here, is that in the Bible, it does seem to say that lending out money or being generous, of course, is one way to be able to bless others. And so now, I know, again, this might sound strange on the surface. And I'm not saying that, you know, we should be always just lending out money or that we should be opening up like a bank of cornerstone here. And there's a lot to unpack with this particular thought, but I don't think we're going to have time to really delve deep into this conversation here. But I wanted to at least highlight a few things. In Matthew 5:42, it says, give to him who asks you, and for him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Proverbs 11:24 also says, one gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give, and only suffers want. Now again, I don't believe that this means you should just be lending out or giving out money to whoever asks without rhyme or reason. But in the context of being good stewards of the finances that God has entrusted to us, if we are faithfully obeying God's commands and stewarding our finances well, which includes managing our debt well, it gives you the ability to be able to lend or to give money to people, having no need to borrow. Now, being a lender, of course, is better than being a borrower, but not for the reason that you might think. Now, it is not about increasing our profit or our net worth. That is not how God looks at it at all, right? God doesn't keep score in terms of how big or large or small your account is. But according to the Bible, lending is not about increasing profit. It is about being generous to those in need. So if we are shackled down by debt, again, that is going to limit our own ability to be able to give or to bless others, right? If your own boat is sinking, you're not going to be able to save anyone else, okay? And so now when we think through, okay, what do some of these things practically mean here? And you probably are thinking through some of the questions in your head. Is like, okay, does that mean that we should take on debt or not, right? And so the Bible never says that it is sin to actually take on debt, right? It's actually okay to borrow, to take on a loan, right? For one, emergencies can happen. In 2 Kings chapter 4, there's a story that talks about how Elisha was trying to help this widow whose husband passed away and she had two sons. And trying to make ends meet. Maybe she took some debts out. I don't know if the husband did or not, but then there were creditors that were trying to take away her two sons, right? And so Elisha basically tells her to go to your neighbors, borrow these vessels, so kind of the concept of borrowing, borrow all these vessels, bring it home, and start pouring oil into them. And then she had one drawer of oil, but she kept pouring oil, and at the end, she had all these vessels of oil. When she filled all of them up, the oil ran out. And Elisha told her, take that out, sell it, pay off your debts, and you can live off the rest. Right? So we see here an example of how debt in itself, again, is not sinful, right? And again, emergencies can also happen too. If you lose your job, if the breadwinner in the family for some reason is unable to work, there's some unforeseen major expenses, a crippling health issue. There's a lot of things that could happen that could mean in the short term financially, okay, we need to take on a loan, right? Also, if we are looking to take on a large transaction, let's say like a home mortgage, if we were to say taking on debt 100% of the time is sinful, I think many of us wouldn't be living here in California, right? So I do think that mortgages or having a larger loan like that, again, it's not sinful to actually take on a loan. Now, if debt is incurred with sinful motives, think back to the heart idols we talked about. So whether you are taking on a loan because you're having a covetous heart or discontentment, not being satisfied with what God has supplied, or being impatient because you believe that in order to be happy, you need to immediately possess whatever it is that you want today that you can't afford, right? And you take on a loan for those particular reasons, then that is a sin, right? And then we can also incur debt because we have a failure to budget and plan, right? But again, borrowing and lending money is not always sinful, right? And so I wanted to take some time to actually look at some more practical areas here for us to talk through here today, right? And so I've listed down, there's a couple of different questions here, right? About credit cards, student loans, is it always better to own or than to rent? So I wanted to make sure that we had some time to talk through some of these areas here. Do you think we have some time here? Do you think we can get a mic set up just for like questions in case? Okay, perfect. Well, as I'm getting that set up, let me talk through the first part here, credit cards. I'm gonna tackle something a little bit easier to tackle first. And so with credit cards, again, knowing that debt in itself is not sinful, so what about the question of credit cards? Or should we have credit cards as Christians? Well, I don't believe that, again, that it's sinful to own credit cards or to have credit cards, but we do have to understand how they work, right? Credit cards can have very high interest, which of course makes everything more expensive. And with credit cards, as I think a lot of us know, it can be really easy to just dig ourselves into a financial hole, right? It's really easy to just swipe the card and be tempted to buy something that you can't really afford today, but you're thinking, no, I got a paycheck coming the next week. I can be able to pay this off later, right? Think back to how, again, debt is presumptuous. We don't want to presume that, right? And so some practical things to consider when it comes to credit cards is you want to make one of the things that Neuheiser mentioned in his book is, you know, instead of using a credit card to pay for things, maybe consider paying cash and seeing if you have a discount or if you could get a discount for paying in cash. He also mentions that you want to make sure that you are disciplined in how you spend and you only spend what is allowed in your budget, right? So if you have $200 budgeted for groceries that month, then you want to use your credit card for that, make sure you're sticking to that particular budget. You know, one thing is treating your credit card like a debit card, right? Make sure that you actually have cash in the bank for whatever purchases that you have, right? Making sure that you're clearly reviewing your statements and transactions every month and that they fall within your budget. And as Neuheiser points out, pay off your credit cards in full every month, right? That's one way where you don't end up having to pay interest, right? But if credit cards do end up becoming too much of a temptation that you can't control your spending when you're using it, then it is probably better to get rid of it, right? And before we move on to the next section here, so I did want to pause and see if anyone had any questions about anything in relation to debt or loans or from what we talked about before. Yes, Brian.
So in terms of credit cards, there's a very wise way to use it. You want to use it like the amount of cash you have is the amount of the amount you're spending on your card, but at the same time, you got to know what benefits those credit cards have. Like for instance, for me, I treat it like cash, and I only buy things I could afford. But then every month or two, I get cash back, about $70 to $50, sometimes $90. So in the end, I'm actually saving money using a credit card because I'm using their benefits against them rather than their interest against me. The same goes with points for flights and things like that. If you like to fly, then you would get a credit card that would fund that for you, and then you just spend wisely within your budget. But in the end, sometimes using cash is actually costing you more money than if you use a credit card wisely, because for everybody that's using a card correctly or wisely, you end up saving 2, 3, 4, 5%, depending on what it is, especially groceries, you can get up to 6, for every single purchase. So these cash backs actually help you reduce the amount of money you spend, but wisely use it to always use that cash back to pay down your credit card, because then it just makes it less expensive to buy the things you're buying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Credit card points, they're great. I worked at pretty much before Fidelity. I was in banking, 11 years. So no, I definitely agree. Like, if you're able to be, the key part of it is being disciplined in your plan, right? And not overspending, not using the credit card as some kind of key to unlock your happiness today or something like that. But if within the budget plan and you're paying off the credit cards every single month, then absolutely take advantage of those points, right? But then if you think back about, ultimately as being good stewards is making sure that we don't fall into temptation with or understanding, again, starting with the heart, right? Like, why am I using the credit card or why am I spending for certain things, even if I can't afford it? But I think it's better to say, I'm going to give up those points and get rid of credit cards if I'm struggling with using credit cards for the wrong reasons, right? Oh.
So one more comment is having cash on hand even when you can buy something. For instance, I had a small inheritance when my dad died, and I had cash on hand to buy a car, and I could have bought that car cash down. But rather than do that, what I did was I put it in a money market or something that bears interest more than the interest that the loan was. So in the end, I actually made more money holding the money and borrowing than actually paying it down up front. But in the end, it's the concept of money now compared to money later, because if you take that loan, especially for like a car or something big, and something happens in which you do need cash, like for instance, a credit card is going to be like 30% interest, 20% interest, but that car loan is going to be 3, 4, 5% interest, right? So cash on hand now, and something happens with an emergency, that money that you have on hand is actually going to cost you less to cover that emergency than a credit card, because it'll be 30% while you're still only paying a 2 or 3% on that car loan. But this would be what, 2, 3 years ago? In terms of percentage rates, but still, the concept is those loans are smaller in interest than it would be higher in interest on those credit cards. So it's good to understand how much you're paying for the things in front of you and how much cash you need on hand for any emergencies, and that would be a wiser way to take a loan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of those kind of situations here, because again, the buyer's not going to say, okay, you should take this credit card or not, or pay off this or not, or hold this. That's where I think a lot of wisdom is going to come in. And I think that's going to be per case or per person situation. And first, again, looking at how you manage your money as a whole, how you view money, right? And so, and then that's kind of why I started off this particular discussion with saying my hope at the end of the day is, again, I'm not a perfect, I don't know, I'm not a pro necessarily when it comes to debt money management. But I'm hoping that with this, it encourages these kind of discussions, right, amongst ourselves, that we can talk through this, like, hey, I'm thinking through this particular financial transaction, and this is what I think. Does that make sense? Is this, thinking through my own heart, thinking through how am I using money, is this actually the wise thing for me and my family? Yes, Hugo.
One thing I've learned over the years is that credit cards promote impulse buying. Because you have the money, So one of the things I try to do is hold off on big purchases so I can think about things. And even if I decide to use a credit card, at least I've had a chance to reflect and see how that fits into the overall picture of my life and also whether my heart is right in pursuing that.
Yeah, no, awesome. I think that's a great principle before any kind of major purchase.
Yeah, I was just thinking one fun thing with money, and it's so neat that you started with the heart, is just what a revealer of the heart it is. Like, it's really, even in all these conversations, to talk practical, specific, but also to come back and ask, like, what is money revealing about what's going on in my heart? Because we can make the right decision practically for the wrong reason, motivated by the wrong heart idol. And even just for me, thinking about how much easier sometimes it is to think about the specifics of money than it is to think big thoughts about God. And so I have to watch out. I know even in my own heart, when I'm going on a walk or, you know, driving somewhere, that it's easy to meditate on money. It's easy to meditate on, okay, if I do this, if I do that, and even some of these credit card things and stuff, it's like, wow, I could, you know, spend hours on the pointguy.com or whatever. And so just to try to be wise and have good discussions with also worshiping, not using thinking about money as an escape from thinking about the incarnation or thinking about the resurrected state or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's so good to be able to have real discussions in church with other believers who can be a mirror. The trouble with talking about money with others, though, is that it's, you might be uncomfortable. Like, other people might actually have different opinions than you. And it might mean that you have to reevaluate your own opinions, which is sometimes something we'd prefer not to do.
Absolutely. I think there was a question in the back there. But yeah, that would be me. I don't want confrontation. So it's like, oh, okay, I won't bring it up. But no, we definitely need to talk about money and how we view it, because it's so intricate, so important aspect of our lives. Yes, I know there's a question in the back.
Yes, my question was in regards to, you had mentioned earlier that there was a gray area that actually resulted in being an idol, which I think was a slothfulness or a lazy approach to budgeting. And I was just wondering if there is any particular book or resource that treats the subject in a spiritual sense, and maybe a book that you walked away reading saying that made much of Christ, and also maybe perhaps identified an area that might otherwise be called a gray area and maybe called it out as sin or something that we can be watchful about, and that might lead us to repentance in a particular area. Spiritual resources in regards to finances.
Oh, so just like finances as a whole?
Right.
You know what? That is tricky, right? Because I will say that I haven't really come across too many books that really address finances in the heart as much, right? So from the hearts was kind of pulling from Tim Keller's Counterfeit God. So I do highly recommend that, even though it's not specifically going to give you financial advice. I think it does a good job describing what's going on in your heart first, right? I think that's the starting point. Neuheiser's book here, Money, Debt, and Finances, is a very practical guide. So he goes through a lot of questions. So he doesn't touch on the heart as much. He'll pull through, like, okay, what does the Bible say about certain things? Then practically, okay, how does this kind of work? I've heard some things about Dave Ramsey. Personally, I haven't read any of his books. So I can't say if I know how far he goes into in terms of, you know, tying in the heart and some of the things there, and then practical wisdom. So for me, I don't know too many resources, unfortunately. So I had to learn a lot of stuff just throughout the years, reading different things and kind of pulling things together. But I don't know if, Pastor Joshua, you have an idea of any. I know you're more well-read than I am by far.
No.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, Trent. Randy Alcorn does have Treasure Principles. Haven't read that in a while, so I got to refresh myself on that. But I know he also has a little book that goes through finances and even the whole thought of, you know, treasuring Christ. That's a big thing that he talks about within that particular book too. But we can. I'm more than happy to talk with you a little bit after and just like the brainstorm or just whatever other questions you might have.
I've heard Randy Alcorn's name in different settings, so he mm-hmm. might have some good theology. Mm-hmm. Like no. that. Okay, thank you. Okay.
Yeah, of course. All right. Any other questions? Not. I'm going to try to go through some of these particular sections here. Or anything related to debt or specific loans you guys had questions about? Well, one thing I wanted to cover here was I know we got a couple of families here with kids going off to college or already in college, and something I definitely have to think about for my kiddos. But yeah, student loans. I'll share some of the things that Neuheisen mentions in his book about student loans that I think are actually really good or practical. And so the question of, like, should we take out student loans? He says, you know, it can be a wise thing to do if it will pay for itself. So what he means there is that there are certain degrees and certifications that do lead to higher earnings, that it could make the cost worthwhile and the debt payments manageable, right? So for example, if like someone wants to go back to school to develop a particular skill and it's gonna cost $20,000, let's say, to go through a particular program, but it's gonna increase his income or salary by, let's say, double, because he's able to work or do a different type of job that pays more, then yeah, it could definitely make sense to do that, right? At the same time, I know, this is just me personally, I would find it still difficult if one of my kids one day says that, Dad, I wanna be, I don't know, a dancer. Is there any dancers here? Again, I'm just in a random example. I would say that it would be harder for me to say, okay, you're a really great dancer, you can go to Juilliard, right? And then pay, I'm guessing the tuition is super expensive, and let's say she doesn't make it, then, again, it would be hard to say, oh, don't let your kids follow your dreams, right? That's the whole American dream, you work hard so your kids can follow their dreams, even if it means bankrupting you. So that would probably not be the wisest use of money, but I will say that I would wrestle with that, right? Telling my kids no for something that maybe they're really passionate about or love. But in those cases, again, it's just having those discussions, right? Even within the church, like, okay, if this situation were to come up, how should we think through it, right? He also mentions that, again, don't assume that every degree is going to pay for themselves, right? We do have to consider financial realities, right, in the world that we're living in here. And we can't assume that everyone who starts college is actually going to finish college, right? And so what are some ways or options to help minimize or avoid student debt? You know, that's a big thing that's being talked about right now, just the amount of student debt in this country. So number one, save and invest for college education. So things like a 529 account. I believe Scott is going to be teaching in next week, I believe, right? So part I think he's going to be covering that. I don't know for sure. But that might be one of these he's going to be talking about as he shares about wisdom in acquiring money, right? So saving for a college education, right? You can join the military, right? They will pay for your college education. Make sure that you are, in some ways, comparison shopping among different college options, right? And even through that process, you can negotiate for more direct aid or scholarships. You can work while you are in college, applying for eligible scholarships, right? So there are different ways to help minimize that cost of college here. And also making sure that your child or you who is going to college, that you're establishing wise financial habits while in college. Right, when you're in college, it can be a big temptation to say, I'm getting your first credit card. I got my first credit card in college, right? Or the first time just being away from home. Right? You want to make sure that you establish some good, disciplined financial habits while there that will help carry you into the workforce while you start to actually make an income. And this other part, so this is just a personal thing. This wasn't covered in the book, but I grew up in, I guess, obviously an Asian family. I went to an Asian church and I lived in a very Asian-dominant area in Singapore Valley, right? So the culture there is all about getting to the best schools, to get the best jobs so they can make the most money. It was all about grades equals financial success or security, right? So I being in the career that I've been in, where I've been in banking, I worked with a lot of different individuals too, who by the world standards would say are very wealthy, and even within my own coworkers, I've seen that actually going to a specific type of college doesn't guarantee anything. A lot of the wealthiest people that I've met, if the goal is financial security, honestly, I have some past coworkers or friends who don't have a college degree but are in the industry I am in today and are well off, Or I've met a lot of business owners who never went to college that just invested well, that actually managed it, that actually were very disciplined in how they spent, and financially are very secure, right? And so for me, I just wanted to bring this up because I don't know, but I know that some of us maybe can struggle with the thought of wanting our kids or ourselves to be comfortable or to be set up well, and that means going to a good school. Again, that's not a guarantee. And from my experience, that's not really the case. The more important thing really, again, is where do you find your security and where do you find your value in? Well, ultimately, again, it's going to be in Christ. But something I just wanted to bring up because that, again, just from my own personal experience and I wanted to make sure that I share that, again, good colleges don't always equal financial security. And at the end of the day, that's not our aim here as Christians, right? I wanted to cover some mortgages here, unless anyone has any questions. Questions about student debt? No? Yes, Brian. I should just have a mic like right in front of you for this whole time.
So I grew up in a poor family where their responsibility was not to pay for my college. They helped when I was there. They helped with my books and things like that. But I had to work almost a full-time job while being in school at the same time. So that's just not a lot of sleeping. But a lot of working. And then, so growing up that way, I didn't ever feel like it was my responsibility to pay for my child's education either, because it's post-education. It's on them, not me, because they can also make the decision not to go. They can make the decision to be entrepreneurs. They can make a decision to do whatever they want at that point, because it's their adults, it's their decision. But in the same time, because we're single income, and at the beginning when we became single income, we didn't have the ability to save for their college. So in terms of student debt, there is a way to do it. Because if you get a subsidized loan from the government, right, it's going to be paid off while you're in school. So if you didn't have the opportunity to save and you do want to help, you can take those loans while they're in school and accumulate while they're still going to school, so that by the time they're done, you've had the opportunity, now that you have a higher income at that point, to help them out if you would like to. But yeah, for my kids, it's a sacrifice. It's like they get their mom at home or they get college later. So it was their mom at home, not college later.
Yeah. Macho, cool.
I was thinking with student loans that, and maybe this applies to a lot of different ways that we think about debt, but a lot of times we follow kind of like conventional wisdom, and we think that it will pay off or it will be okay because we're not doing something by the world standards that's irresponsible. And so even with student loans, like you might go to college and get like a computer science degree and think that like because I'm majoring in something that the market sees as valuable, it's good to take out the student loan. But I think you said a lot about this already, but like beyond just doing something that the world considers financially responsible, it's also a matter of the heart too. And so I like that you pointed out a lot of different ways that you can kind of hustle to work or to do different things to kind of keep your student loans down, because it kind of goes back to that James 4 principle about boasting about tomorrow, right? Like even if you major in something that the market values, there's no guarantee that you will find a job. And kind of like in my experience, like I graduated with a math degree in 2009 and had no jobs. And back then, you know, they said like if you study math, if you study engineering, if you study computer science, you'll be fine. But we also went through the dot-com bubble. And so at the end of the day, God is still sovereign, and it's really a heart issue because our trust is not in making the responsible decision. And also, I think I'm rambling a little bit, but there was a principle in the book that I really liked. It was from Ecclesiastes 11:6, where he said, "In the morning sow your seed, and at evening withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good." And this kind of goes back to that James 4, in that I think with things like student loans or just really anything, like we make a decision and we just think like, all right, I made the right decision, this is gonna pay off. And then we kind of like find comfort in that. But there's kind of this principle to continue to sow in the evening. So yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know, random thoughts, I guess.
No problem. And that's how that all ties in again, ultimately to the heart, right? Because if we find security in money, at the end of the day, that could very much let us down, right? Like I mentioned earlier, money's not going to protect us from tragedy.
Can I say something really quick? When you talk about the cultural inference, that remind me a story that I read, a missionary in a third world country, and then a child mentioned that this is a weird thing in the States, is that there's a big room called a garage that to put cars in it. And also they have a room, no one lives in it. There is only clothes and hangers. So they're saying that in the States, most of us live so rich, and we are so influenced, our spending influenced by the people surrounding us. And that's we see poor and rich and how we spend money. But if we have a global perspective, you know, we live more than we need. So the Bible said food and clothing we should be thankful for. So instead of inference by the cultural inferences that do to us, we always need to remind us that, you know, God, what is God's way and how we look at money from what God sees it.
No, thanks, man. And again, that ties in again to truth one, right? That God is the owner and source of all wealth. So ultimately here, even though we're talking about debt, it still ties into how are we stewarding our finances and resources in a way so that hopefully we're in a very wealthy nation here, right? And most of us here compared to most Americans are really wealthy. So how do we use our wealth to be able to be a blessing to those around us and those in need, right? And part of managing debt and making sure that we are disciplined and not being irresponsible with that means that, again, we aren't shackled or tied down when it comes to being able to give to the Lord's work. But no, thank you so much, Mitt, for bringing that up. Yes.
So I just recently finished Dave Ramsey's personal finance class. And one of the things that he said was like the principles for being responsible with your money was paying cash for college. And it is possible to pay for cash for college and not take out loans. And I think it's very irresponsible to take out loans because there are scholarships and there are government grants out there. And you can work and you can wait to go to college. So I just don't believe in taking out student loans because just because your field might have an average net worth or like yearly earnings, it doesn't really mean that that's going to be like what's going to happen because you can't plan for the future. You can't know that you're going to get a certain job that'll pay $50K a year. So there's just a certain level of uncertainty that as humans, we just don't know. So I don't think it's wise to take out student loans.
Mm-hmm. No, thanks for sharing that. What is your name again?
Ren.
No, thanks for sharing, Ren. Perfect. No, we're running up a little bit on time, but I had a feeling that I wanted to make sure we had room to or time to be able to talk here. Let me cover this one particular area I did want to make sure that we at least did cover here. And it's this last question here of, what if I am struggling with debt, right? And so, again, not saying that we're raising hands for those of us who are struggling with debt, but I wanted to share a little bit of encouragement. And again, like I mentioned before, that within church, hopefully, this helps to break down some of that uncomfortableness that comes with talking about money. And that if you are struggling with certain of these aspects that we've been talking about, that you find a brother or sister that you are close with and be able to be open and talk about it, right? But again, for those of you who might be struggling with debt, at the end of the day, God loves you and cares about your situation, right? Having debt does not reduce his love for you, and being debt-free doesn't increase it either, right? And in Colossians 2, 13 and 14, Paul writes, "And you who are dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with his legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross." So again, whether we are struggling with debt, or for those of us who are just trying to think through and trying to be good stewards of what God has given to us, this is ultimately what we need to be focusing or hang our hat on, our hope on, right? That we, in the face of our almighty and holy God, had the biggest amount of debt that we could never wipe out. But he took it upon himself to cancel that debt and nailed it to the cross on his own son. And so I wanted to make sure, again, for those who might be, again, struggling through it, that you understand, again, that we here, hopefully as a church, are willing to want to come alongside and help and talk through these things together with you. That last session I put there are some of the general principles about debt that Neuheiser lists in his book. I won't read through that because I know we're running up on time, but essentially some good principles to when it comes to thinking about debt. And I listed the resources again at the bottom. I know I mentioned them earlier, but the two books, Neuheiser's book and Keller's book about counterfeit gods. But yeah, again, my hope is that we can continue to have this discussion about finances. I know we got two more sessions coming up with Scott and Jim Patong teaching too as well. But hopefully you found this informative. And then if you guys have any questions or want a further discussion about debt or anything, I am always available.